It's that time to talk about Thanksgiving. But this year, I actually want to start by talking a little bit about Halloween. See, for some reason, like even when my kid was a baby, whenever you'd say Statue of Liberty, she would raise her right arm and pretend to hold a torch. So this year, my wife sewed a brilliant Statue of Liberty costume for her, you know, complete with torch and crown. And I took her out in the neighborhood trick-or-treating, and I couldn't believe how many people were so psyched to see the Statue of Liberty. I mean, it was a great costume, and she is a very cute kid, if I say so myself, but I think people were, like, moved by it. And one person actually shouted, "Yes! We need a symbol of freedom and democracy!" Which, you know, is kind of an intense thing to yell at a kid, but cool, I'm with you. And I was also a little bit like, hey, you know, we live in New York, you could go on your roof and see the real thing. But anyway, give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. You know, the spirit of welcome that this statue is supposed to beam out into the world. That is what I'm thinking about this Thanksgiving. And earlier this year, I had the honor of being a judge for the Vilcek Foundation, an organization that recognizes achievements in science and the arts by immigrant Americans. The kind of artists they recognize changes every year, and this year it was the culinary arts. And to celebrate that, the Vilcek Foundation also released a beautiful cookbook this fall called A Place at the Table. It's a collection of recipes from immigrant chefs all around the country. So this year, for our Thanksgiving show, we went and visited and talked with some of the chefs featured in that book to ask them about their Thanksgiving traditions and memories and what the holiday and being here has meant to them. We'll start with Ann Kim. She's the chef owner of Young Joni, Pizzeria Lola, and Hello Pizza in Minneapolis. And I mean, if a Korean immigrant becoming a James Beard Award-winning pizza chef in the Midwest isn't an American story, you tell me what is. We caught up with Ann in her restaurant, Young Joni. So you came to the United States at 4 years old.
Yes.
From South Korea. Mm-hmm. It was the late 70s, and mm-hmm. you settled here in Minnesota. Do you remember your early Thanksgivings? What
were
they like?
I do. And it's funny because I would say 95% of the meals that I ate as a child growing up were Korean. But Thanksgiving was actually an opportunity to eat a fully westernized Thanksgiving meal.
Oh, yeah.
And it was interesting because my parents, the first time we had the meal, it was actually at my, I call her my grandmother, but she was my uncle's mother. And my uncle married my mother's youngest sister, and he's passed now, but he's American. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to make sure that we also were introduced to Western culture, mm-hmm. so that he was concerned about us going to school and being ostracized for being other, right?
Sure.
So he really wanted to make sure that we could assimilate. And so our first Thanksgiving was actually at his mother's house, and it was full on as Western as it could be: turkey, mashed potatoes, stuffing, you know, the green beans and sweet potatoes, and something called that my grandmother made called in the pink salad, which was basically like a strawberry jello salad with sour cream and canned pineapple and nuts. And
you got the full deal.
The full deal. Actually, my sister and I were always thrilled to have Thanksgiving because it was something other than rice and kimchi.
Yeah. So you were psyched about it. Do you remember, like, what you thought of it, though? Like, when you saw the spread or what your parents thought of it?
Yeah. You know, my parents are interesting because for them, food, or for my mother, food was always a representation of being able to have plenty, like, have enough. As an immigrant, as a product of war, she went through the Korean War. She was 13 during the Korean War, and she was actually from the North. It took almost a year on foot to get down to the South.
Wow.
She remembers looking back and seeing their home village go up in flames. And
oh my God.
It was a devastating experience. And one thing that she never had enough of during war is food.
Right.
She would tell stories about squid being washed up against the shore because they walked along the shore to make it down to the South, and people fighting and running and grabbing squid and making a big bonfire and roasting it over the flames just to get enough food. And so for her, like, coming to the table, gathering, and having enough food for everybody was something that she felt was a gift.
Yeah.
And so Thanksgiving, when there was all this food, to her was like the epitome of taking care of people and loving people.
Yeah, yeah.
And so after that first Thanksgiving, she took it on herself too, that when it was her turn to make Thanksgiving dinner, it was the biggest turkey she could find, you know, probably four times bigger than it should have been, mainly because she wanted to use that whole carcass for turkey and kimchi soup the next day, or a congee, and then using the dark cuts of meat that we would eat cold wrapped in kimchi. So it was always about stretching it out. Oh, it's delicious, let me tell you.
Oh my God, that's totally true though, right? Like for so many people, like that idea of plenty, like that is the promise of America. Like that's literally why
people
came.
Immigrate to this country, right? I mean, so many people live in a state of scarcity. Right? Scarcity of freedom, scarcity of democracy, scarcity of financial well-being, safety. And that's what this country promises, or that's what we hope this country promises, and opportunity. And that's why we came here.
Right.
And, you know, I think for me, food is just an extension. Hospitality is an extension of offering that up to everybody in a very inclusive way.
Right.
You know, that you come into our kitchen, into our restaurant, we're here to serve you. And it's the greatest feeling to see people come, sit, say that they had a horrible day, or they're celebrating an anniversary, or they come and they can rely on the consistency of our cheese pizza, and it makes their really crappy day a little bit better. You know, that means a lot to me.
For sure.
I mean, that's worth more than the dollars. I mean, we need the dollars to stay open, but, you know, that's why I do what I do.
For sure. Well, thinking about your uncle's thought of, you know, will this family feel comfortable here? Will they feel like they belong? Did you feel like you belonged when you were younger?
Oh, hell no. It was hard. A lot of people don't know this about me. They assume that I'm a first generation, but I'm an immigrant, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
And growing up here in the Midwest as a Korean immigrant was really hard. There wasn't a lot of diversity. It's changed over the years.
Sure.
We have a huge Hmong population and Somali population, and a lot of people are recognizing how nice it is to actually live in the Twin Cities. So there's much more diversity, but back in the late 70s, early 80s, I grew up in a suburb, Apple Valley, and I don't remember a single other Asian student. And that was a hard place to be.
Yeah.
The first lunch that my maternal grandmother immigrated with us to the country, because both my parents worked multiple jobs, graveyard shifts. So she really kind of taught me about food and raised us until I was about 10 years old, and she went back to Korea. But one of the first lunches she packed for me was rice, dried fish, kimchi, and kim, which is basically Korean for nori wraps.
Yeah.
And I opened that, you know, the bento box, and everybody around me just, ew, what is that? You know, what's, you know, garbage. And I was ostracized. I mean, when you're, you know, when you're 6 years old and you hear it, all you want to do is be the same.
Fit in, right.
You want to fit in. You want to look the same. You want to dress the same. And we were obviously not the same. It was hard. And I used to burn toast before I'd have any friends come over. Because picture this, too. Growing up here in Minnesota, you couldn't go to the grocery store and buy a jar of kimchi or gochujang or doenjang. It might have been different growing up if you grew up in New York City or L.A., where they had huge Korean populations. But because we didn't have it, my mother and grandmother had to make it. So they made their own doenjang and gochujang. They made their own kimchi. My grandmother preserved and pickled meat. So it didn't smell very good. It was pretty funky. So for me, I'd never have my friends over. And when I did, I was burning toast because I was so ashamed. I was so ashamed of who I was. And now look, now, you know, I couldn't be prouder. You know, now I feel like I get to introduce people to who I am through my food and my cooking.
Did you feel like you had to get to the point where you felt like you wanted to bring in those flavors from your childhood into your professional life?
Yeah. When I opened up Pizzeria Lola 9 years ago, I didn't really have any intent. I didn't set out to make it a Korean-inspired pizzeria.
Right.
All I really wanted to do was harken back to my college days in New York, when every street corner had a neighborhood pizzeria, and every street felt like a neighborhood, right? Every corner felt like a neighborhood. And I missed that. And so when I started playing around with pizzas, I thought, you know, I think some of these Korean flavors would really be delicious on a pizza. It's just a vehicle, right, for flavors. That's what pizza is. So I started tinkering around, and the first pizza I actually did was the Lady Zaza, which has kimchi on it. When kimchi is cooked, it actually makes the flavor a little milder, and people loved it. And they'd ask what that spicy, cabbagey stuff was. They didn't even know really what it was. It was their first experience to kimchi, which kind of floored me that their first experience to kimchi was in Minneapolis at a pizzeria.
On your pizza.
You know? But the beautiful thing about it is they wanted to learn more.
Right.
They loved the flavors, and they asked questions, and it made them want to explore. And so that was sort of like my entryway to see, oh, do people like these flavors? Till this day, my mother still believes that Americans, like when I say, yeah, Americans like Korean food. As a matter of fact, they love Korean food. She still doesn't believe it. For me, like, this food that doesn't, at first didn't really make sense to a lot of people, like, oh yeah, we're going to have kimchi on the menu. We're also going to have a whole grilled fish with like a Thai namjim sauce, and we're going to have Japanese sweet potatoes, and we're going to have like a chicory Caesar along with pizzas. And it's like, what the hell are you thinking? What is that? And it just works.
Yeah.
It's just good. It's flavorful. And it's just, I think it's the way people want to eat. It just, it's, I think it's a reflection of who we are today as people.
Bringing it back to Thanksgiving, if you think back to those first Thanksgiving tables that you saw.
Yeah.
What's on your Thanksgiving table now?
Oh, well, I don't know if I've ever actually made a Thanksgiving dinner for the family. That is
really
a goal of mine. But it's
you are an award-winning chef. You can probably make it happen.
I know, but that's too much pressure. You know, for me, it's like Thanksgiving isn't about impressing people in that way, you know, being chefy.
Yeah.
I think Thanksgiving is just about, like, comfort.
Yeah.
And warmth, right? But my goal is to make Thanksgiving, because my mother is 83 now, and it's hard for her. We used to go to her, people used to ask when they'd come to Minnesota, what's the best Korean restaurant that we can send my friends? And I have to think, it's like, I don't go out to eat Korean food. I go to my mom's house. You know, and she was always welcoming, bringing friends over. And now, sadly, she's not really able to cook much anymore. So one goal is to A, make Thanksgiving dinner for my family, and B, also try to get all these recipes that I took for granted that my mother just knew in her head and would just make, try to record those things so I have them. You know, the other day she was telling me, she's like, oh, I just don't like store-bought doenjang. And I said, what are you talking about, Mom? She's like, I bought it the other day. I said, I thought you always bought it. She's like, no, I still make it, and I decided to buy it, but I'm not doing that anymore. So I told her we have to get together and we have to do that, you know, ferment it and dry it. And I said, it's really important to me that I have this. And she's, like I said, she's like, why would you want to learn that? You know, like, be a professional. Like, this is what you do when you can't afford to go, you know, buy these things, or you don't want to, you know, I think because she struggled in her life, because she's a product of war, she's never kind of not known a day when she hasn't struggled, that she doesn't want that for her children.
Right.
You know, my sister and I feel very fortunate that we moved here, because I think the opportunities that would have presented themselves to us as women in Korea would not have been there for me like they are here. So I'm really grateful that she made these sacrifices. And it's a classic immigrant story, right? This is not the life they imagined for me.
Sure.
And I've probably broken their hearts more times than I can count. I think they're finally proud. I think when the Korean embassy tweeted that I won the James Beard, they were like, oh, okay, sure, good job.
Well, actually, I mean, what did your parents think? What did they say to you when you told them that you wanted to be a cook?
Well, it was worse when I told them I wanted to be an actor.
Yeah.
You know, it's great that we can laugh about it now, but back then it was devastating. They
sure.
pretty much disowned me. And I know now it was because, again, they didn't move to this country so I could struggle.
Right.
They came to this country so I could have an opportunity to not go through what they went through. So for them, it's like an actor. Like, all you do is, the adage is struggling actor. For them, it was, they were afraid for me. They were worried that I would have to go through things that they didn't imagine for me. And so they saw that, like, being an actor is no different from being a whore. You put makeup on your face and you go out and you present yourself as someone else. You sell yourself.
Wow.
And so that was really difficult. But they realized that after I was able to make a career of it for 8 years and never ask them for a dime and really be able to make a living out of it, that they realized, okay, well, you're that child. We get it. But I never thought that they were really proud of me. And so when my husband and I decided to open our first restaurant together, I told him, I said, I know you think this is going to be sound strange, but we cannot tell my parents that we're opening up a restaurant together. I know, it's funny, but I'm so glad we can laugh now. But he looked at me funny and he just said, I don't quite understand. Why not? I said, because it's going to bring a lot of pain and it's just going to be far easier for us to not have to answer questions along the way.
Right.
Because it took us over a year from start to finish to open up the first restaurant. That was totally bootstrapped together, maxed out savings, a small loan, making our own lights out of number 10 tomato cans. I mean, it was like a labor of love. And I said, I don't know if we're going to succeed, so I can't have them see the process.
Yeah.
I need them to see a restaurant that's open
right.
with guests, right?
Right?
And he understood. And then a small little article was going to come out before we opened. And I thought, oh, dang, I need to tell them about this before they read about it in the paper, because that's how they found out I was an actor. So I was like, we cannot go through this trauma a second time. So basically, I said, okay, there's going to be a little blurb in the Star Tribune about us opening up a restaurant. Brought them to the restaurant. They were really confused. And I sat them down and I said, Mom and Dad, I know how you're going to feel about this, but welcome to my restaurant. This is something that I've wanted to do for a long time. This is ours. And I still don't think, for like the first half hour, I think they were still a little bit like, what is going on? But my mother stood up. I remember her like taking her fist and knocking me on the head. And she's like, okay, yeah. And that was, she didn't speak much. She didn't say much. They still do drive-bys, Pizzeria Lola, to make sure that we're busy. And they'll send me texts like,
oh,
yeah, there's lines out your door. Why? It's like, I don't know, Mom. I guess they like it.
Yeah,
yeah, they'll go to church and drive by and text me and say, it's busy, it's good, you know?
Yeah.
And my dad will sometimes get into the restaurant, and they know my dad now, so usually he'll just kind of say hello, and he'll bolt to the bathroom to make sure it's clean, because he says, be humble, be kind, and always make sure you have a clean bathroom. Because he says that's representative of what you're going to present, you know, as your food.
Yeah.
And so those are words that I take to heart and try to remember. Yeah.
I think the translation for that is I love you.
Oh. Hey, I hope so. Because, you know, I really love them.
Thank you so much for having us, Anne.
Oh, thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Anne Kim is the James Beard Award-winning chef of Young Joni, Pizzeria Lola, and Hello Pizza in Minneapolis. You can find her recipe for grilled Korean-style short ribs with Fresno pepper chimichurri and yogurt from the book A Place at the Table at splendidtable.org.